Let's talk about telepathy, spiritual telepathy. When we come back in a moment, Colleen Morrow, our special guest on Coast to Coast AM. Tonight we talk about spiritual telepathy. Colleen Morrow is the author of Spiritual Telepathy, Ancient Techniques to Access the Wisdom of Your Soul. She's been the founder and editor-in-chief of Intuition Magazine. Now, Intuition explored the higher potential of the mind and the many varied ways of intuitive knowing. The magazine provided how-to information, cutting-edge research, and interviews with leaders in the field worldwide. Colleen's first time on Coast to Coast, Colleen, isn't it?
I'm very excited about it.
All right, me too. I'm looking forward to this. Great job with the book, too, by the way, Spiritual Telepathy, which is different. I want you to tell us, what's the difference between telepathy and spiritual telepathy?
Well, there's actually three types of telepathy. The lowest is instinctual or feeling-based telepathy. The second is mental or mind-to-mind telepathy. And the third and highest is spiritual telepathy. And instinctive telepathy was the first type of telepathy we developed. Because it's feeling-based, this type of telepathy allows us to register the feelings and needs of others at a distance, especially the people we're closest to. The second, mental telepathy, is thought transference. And spiritual telepathy can be defined as communication from the subtle worlds, from our souls or from even higher levels. And communication from the subtle worlds is always telepathic. We don't audibly hear the information. It's dropped into our brains where it's formulated into thought. And I like this teaching because it illustrates the progression of our perceptual abilities over time, from the instinct of the caveman to the intellect of modern man to the pure intuitive knowing of future man. And we're right at that doorway now where we can take that next step.
By the way, I'm impressed because on the back of your book, the praise for your work done by four important people who have all been on the program, including the late Edgar Mitchell, of course. Mitch Horowitz is on quite often. Larry Dossey's been on the program. And Barbara Marks Hubbard as well. You've got a lot of heavy hitters there supporting your work.
I know. I was thrilled. Absolutely thrilled.
That is good. How did you get involved in this?
Well, I was in magazine publishing for many years. I worked as a staff person for a variety of magazines and then got the opportunity to start my own. And it's a good story, and I like to tell it because...
Yeah, I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, it's a good illustration of the type of experience I'm writing about. It was in the late 80s, and I was living in San Francisco. I had worked, as I said, for a variety of magazines, and I suddenly found myself without a job and was trying to figure out what to do. I had already worked for all the magazines I liked, so I was a little stumped about what my next step would be. And I spent my days talking to editors, researching new magazines, and I was very worried about money and the fact that I was unemployed. And one morning I woke up and I decided that I needed to take a mental health day, that I would give myself one 24-hour period where I wouldn't think about the fact that I was unemployed. I would just enjoy the day. I remember it was October, which is my favorite month in San Francisco. And I went out and bought some bulbs and decided just to putter around in my garden. And as I was puttering around, I had a type of intuitive experience that I've never had before. A thought suddenly flashed through my mind, and the thought was the center for applied intuition. And I had always accessed intuition through feelings or some kind of body-based sensation, but this was a purely mental experience. The words seemed to have dropped right into my brain. And I immediately knew that it wasn't my thought, and it certainly made no logical sense. I knew about the center, and I had met Bill Kautz, the founder, but I couldn't imagine why I would go there to look for a magazine job. He had a tiny two-room office, and I knew that he ran intuition trainings, but there didn't seem to be anything that would work for somebody looking for a magazine job. But I mulled it over for a few days, and then I thought, well, what the heck? And I called him up, and I asked him to send me information about the center's activities. And a few days later, I got a large manila envelope, and when I dumped it out, there were several brochures and a very simple typewritten journal called Applied Psi. And this was the quarterly publication that he sent to the center's 200 members. The journal was about the subjects of intuition and creativity. And as I sat there and flipped through the pages, I thought, wow, this is really interesting. This could be a real magazine. It would have to have a new name and be spiffed up, but I thought the subjects would appeal to an audience way beyond the center's small membership. So I called him up, made an appointment to talk to him the following week. And when I arrived and pitched him on my idea, he just lit up and told me that he had always dreamed of turning Applied Psi into a real magazine, but the right person had never come along. So I went home, banged out a proposal, came back the next day, and I was suddenly launching a new magazine. We called it Intuition, a Magazine for the Higher Potential of the Mind. And I got two issues out before Bill closed the center and signed the rights over to me. And I later got a grant and set up an office. And when I think about it now, there's several interesting things about the story. One, I could never have gotten there through rational process. It never would have occurred to me to look him up when I was looking for a job. I got something better than I was looking for. And I couldn't have seen that in the next decade there would be an absolute flood of information on this subject, and the magazine provided a focal point. And I published the magazine until the year 2000, and then I started to study the Ageless Wisdom teachings. And I was immediately intrigued by the subject of spiritual telepathy and realized that this was the next step. It was a more advanced level of the work that I had done with the magazine.
Oh, good for you. And it's been a life changer ever since, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, getting back to these three levels of telepathy.
Hello?
Are they all important?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The first is that we developed is instinctual. And when we develop the next higher type of perception, the higher type of knowing, the old way doesn't disappear. It just drops below the threshold of our conscious awareness. So we have gut feelings. We have this instinctive understanding and knowing and connection with the people that we're closest to. But it's sort of underground. It's not something that's uppermost in our minds, but it's there operating.
Do we all have this ability? I do believe we do, don't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I wonder if you ever stumbled across any work of my aunt, Colleen, Shafika Caregula, my late aunt, I should say.
I have not.
She wrote a book called Breakthrough to Creativity. And what she was, is she was a psychiatrist. And she decided to change her career and study telepathy exclusively, clairvoyance. Mm-hmm. And she moved out to Los Angeles, and that's what she wanted to do. And, you know, she died under tragic circumstances. Really was never able to finish her work, but in the short time she was doing it, I think she was a pioneer into these different areas. Have you gotten to a point where you've come up with your own theories of why this works?
Well, I don't know that they're my theories. What I did is, again, as I studied the Ageless Wisdom teaching, and it's really all laid out, the three types of telepathy and how it's a step-by-step process and how we're really at that doorway where we can start to develop these higher levels of perception. And when we do, we really take our step beyond the human world into the superhuman world. So I see it as an evolutionary step, and those of us who really are focused on this are the pioneers who are leading the way, really, to the next stage of our species evolution.
Is it getting better and better and better for people to get intuitive?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we are already all intuitive, and we always have been. It's just really starting to trust it and use it. And I could have made a fatal mistake in not contacting Bill Kautz, you know, but I did act on it. I thought about it for a few days because it didn't make any sense, but then I did act on it. And if I hadn't, this whole thing would not have unfolded the way it had.
One could say, though, that was your gut instinct that did that.
Well, it was something. I mean, it was such an experience. And again, I knew it wasn't my thought. I'd never had an experience like that before. And I stood there. I mean, it really stopped me on my tracks. And I stood there, and even though I knew instantly that it wasn't my thought, I still tried to trace back how I could have generated that thought and why. And I gave up because there was no reason. And so I knew it was some sort of experience, and it really made sense to follow it up to see where it led.
People have these incredible telepathic thoughts, the intuition, but a lot of people, Colleen, don't act on it. They make that mistake, mm-hmm. and that happens time and time again. It's, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. It's there, it's available for them, and they just don't react to it. What's it going to take to get people to understand that this is real stuff?
Well, I think they just have to test it. A lot of what we did in the 90s was really helping people get in touch with that basic instinctive knowing that we all have. That really went underground. As with the rise of the scientific worldview, the mind was everything and rational knowing was everything, and the old ways, the old superstitious ways, were, you know, considered a lesser form of knowing. And again, it didn't disappear. It just went below the threshold of our conscious awareness. And so when you start to trust it and act on it, then you can see how your life changes. What we would suggest to people when we were doing the magazine is that they keep a journal and get their intuitive hits and follow them and see how many really pan out.
And they would be surprised that a lot pan out.
That's right.
Indigenous cultures use this all the time, don't they?
Absolutely. It was really fun to do this kind of research, because the source material for this book is very esoteric, and I wanted this book to be read by a group wider than those that are just already reading esoteric books. So I looked for ways that I could validate this teaching. The wisdom teachings tell us that instinctive telepathy utilizes the solar plexus center, or the third chakra, which is the center of instinct and emotion. Pretty esoteric concept. So I looked around at other traditions and cultures to see if there was a way to back this up. And what I found is that the same teaching appears in many different places, and in each tradition, the area around the solar plexus is the key. The kahunas, who are the native priests of Hawaii, believe that telepathic messages are sent directly from one solar plexus to another. The African Bushmen have a similar teaching. They believe that all living creatures are connected by a silver stream of energy that extends from one belly button to another. And they use these horizontal lines like telephone wires to send and receive telepathic messages. The Australian Aboriginals believe it's their miwi that makes it possible for them to see and hear at a distance. And this word translates as solar instinct. And again, it's located in the pit of the stomach. And I also really enjoyed reading about the Japanese concept of haraji, which they call belly talk. The word derives from hara, which translates as belly or guts, and ji, which translates as the art of. And many businessmen take great pride in depending on the art of the belly when they make important business decisions. And a business deal will often be called off if the haraji is not right. And again, in our culture, we talk about gut feelings. So it's all centered around the same area, and the same teaching is then repeated again and again in all these different cultures.
Well, we've seen people like businessmen, like successful sports coaches, who use their gut instincts and do some incredible things.
That's right.
Would you call that, though, physical, or is it more telepathic?
Well, I call it that instinctive kind of telepathy, that kind of perception, that knowing, that sort of gut knowing. Telepathy, you might make the distinction that telepathy is communication between two or more people, and then we also have that kind of clairvoyant perception. So they're similar but different things.
In the ancient world, were they born with this ability? Did they train each other this? Because we have generally lost something.
That's right. That's right. Well, I think you see it so much in indigenous cultures because they're not so focused on the mind. They're still really focused on this instinctual way of knowing. And again, when we start to develop the mind, then we start to discount this other way. And so it doesn't go away. It's there. It just operates sort of below the threshold of our conscious awareness.
I was driving down the road today on the 405 in Los Angeles. Ever do that?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And these things are happening to me way too often. And I had this incredible feeling that a car next to me was going to pull over into my lane way too close to me, even sideswipe me. I just felt it. I don't know why, but I did. So I had two options, to slow down or go forward, but just get away from this person.
Mm-hmm.
And I slowed down a little bit just so I wasn't parallel with this person. And sure enough, they didn't even look. They just went right over. And had I been where I was supposed to, I think they would have sideswiped me.
Interesting.
Something kicks in to protect us.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't it work all the time?
Well, I think it does work all the time. We're just really conditioned not to pay attention to it. And that's a lot of what we did with the magazine, is really, again, teach people to honor it and use it.
Are people meditating in order to get this ability?
Well, to get these higher abilities, absolutely. We have to do a daily mind training practice called creative or Raja Yoga meditation. And this is how we actually make that contact with the higher worlds. And this is the highest type of telepathy. And I think people are ready for this now. What we did in the 90s was really create the foundation for this. And this type of meditation is an active type of meditation. many meditation practices focus only on quieting the mind. And in this type of meditation, we go a step further, and we actually train the mind to transmit information from the soul to the brain. The information has to reach the brain to become part of our conscious awareness. And it's in the same way that our homes are wired for telephone and internet connection. Excuse me, I have to cough.
Okay, cough away. There you go.
I'm just getting over a cold.
Oh,
right?
It's the worst. The summer cold is
I know, I know. But anyway, it's like the way our homes are wired for telephone and internet. This type of meditation allows us to create the threads and cables that link us to the higher worlds. And we do this by projecting our attention upward to the soul day after day. And we visualize the soul as a star about 6 inches above our head. And when we do this, we anchor small threads of energy that eventually, thread by thread, form a bridge between the mind, the brain, and the soul. And the bridge is called the Rainbow Bridge, or the Bridge of Light in the wisdom teachings. It's called the Antahkarana in the Hindu text, and I even found it in the Bible. It's called the Straight or Narrow Gate in the New Testament. So this is the kind of telepathy that we're moving into. We already have the instinctive telepathy operating below our conscious awareness. This is the kind of telepathy that we're developing now.
If people have lived together for a long time, or family members, are they generally more apt to be telepathic between themselves?
Yeah, and I would call that instinctive telepathy, and again, because it's feeling-based. And Rupert Sheldrake has done a lot of work on this. I think he's done more work to validate this type of telepathy than any other scientist.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote those great books that you probably talked to him about, The Sense of Being Stared At, and that great book about animal telepathy. He's collected, I think, over 5,000 case histories illustrating this type of telepathy, and his research is ongoing, and people can participate in many experiments via his website. He makes the point that this type of telepathy is most common among people with strong emotional bonds, parents and children, husband and wives, lovers and best friends. He says that the most striking examples of this type of telepathy involve very intense emotions, emergency, death, or distress. And in talking to my friends, I discovered that several of them have had this kind of experience, and I put several of those stories in the book.
Give us one example.
Okay. My friend Marcia Emery, who is an author and intuition trainer, was driving in downtown Washington, D.C. years ago when she hit the brakes and her foot went straight down to the floor. And she realized she had no brakes.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was very congested. She had no brakes, and she had one of two options, to mow down a sidewalk full of pedestrians or smash into a row of parked cars. And she said she suddenly heard this voice say, make a quick right. She did. She ended up in an alley between two clothing stores, smashed into the wall. And her car just crumpled, but she managed to walk away with just scratches. And she was shaking like a leaf all the way home, and she was thinking, I'm not going to tell my mother about this because she's always worried about her driving in the city. So she walks into the house. The phone's ringing. It's her mom. She picks it up, and her mother says, what happened to your car? Yeah, and she said, how'd you know? And she said, I don't know. The words just came right out of my mouth. So she picked it up. She knew something had happened.
We all know. Mm. We can feel things.
That's right.
You ever get that feeling of that dreaded phone call you do not want to take, but you have to?
Yes.
And it's, you know, something's happened to a family member. There's an accident, or God knows, even worse. It's uncanny how that happens. Now, here's the question. Is it the sender or the receiver that's doing this? I mean, is it, you know, would it be me if I pick this up, or me if I'm sending it? Who's doing it?
Well, the person sending it is the person who's experiencing the intense emotion, and the person receiving is the person who picks that up. That the more intense it is, the easier it is, apparently, to pick it up.
So it's a two-way street.
That's right. Telepathy is always a communication.
Interesting take. Mm-hmm. Colleen, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. Colleen's website, of course, is spiritualtelepathy.net, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And I tell you what, to help your throat and your voice a little bit, we'll take phone calls a little earlier for you. And I'm looking for questions for Colleen and or stories directly related to telepathy. How has that affected you? How has that helped you? So check in with us on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take the calls a little half hour earlier on Coast to Coast AM. Spiritual telepathy, ancient techniques to access the wisdom of your soul. I love this stuff. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Colleen Morrow with us, her book, Spiritual Telepathy. Colleen, is there a science behind this at all, in your opinion? Colleen? Where is she? She's Tom, you got to call her back. She has fallen off. So get her, and we'll get to the calls, and we'll get her back on. With all this telepathy, you would have thought she would have known that she was. You got her back? Okay. You back?
Back.
There you go. Where'd you go?
I don't know. I just suddenly got cut off.
Huh. Poof. Sometimes you won't hear anything, and some people think you get cut off, and they hang up.
So. Well, I heard a beep tone, so I think I was.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Somebody got you.
Yeah.
They don't want you talking about this subject. Well, my question was, is it a science or is it more metaphysical?
Oh, both. Both. I think it's really a natural ability.
Explain that.
Mm-hmm. Natural ability. I mean, as I said, that as we evolve as a species, we develop progressively more subtle and higher ways of knowing. And we started with instinct, and you can think about how instinct served early cavemen because they needed to sense danger, they needed to hunt and so on. And with the rise of the scientific worldview, we started to develop our rational minds. And with the educational system that we've created, the development of the rational mind really is at its peak now. So it's time for that next higher way of knowing. And that's why I was so intrigued by the subject of spiritual telepathy, because I realized that this really is the more advanced level of the intuition work. I think it's the next wave coming. And these things seem to go in waves. I've noticed that in the 70s, for example, psychism was really the big deal, and there were psychic books and trainings in schools. And in the 80s, it was all about channeling. In the 90s, it was all about intuition. After the turn of the century and the release of the Stargate information from the military, remote viewing was really the focus.
It was hot.
And now I think the next wave is going to be the spiritual telepathy, this higher type of intuitive telepathy.
You think parents should teach their children this?
Well, I think children will be taught this in the educational system.
In schools, really?
Yeah, I do. I think that this evolution is going to be beyond the rational mind, where we can pull information down intuitively rather than having to study by rote. And I think that we're already seeing this, that these kids are coming in and they have to be medicated in large numbers to be able to function in our educational system, that it's easier for them to access intuitive information than to learn by rote. And the only way that they can function is to be given drugs.
Well, that's not a good thing.
No. So spiritual telepathy is really called the new and true science of the mind, and that in the future, this is going to be trained from a very early age, and kids are going to learn how to access information from that level.
Well, do you find that parents are supporting this?
Some are. Some are, especially with this whole wave of information about the new kids, and you know they're called different things, indigo children and so on. But parents are noticing that these kids are coming in with really enhanced intuitive ability, and they're supporting them in many ways.
If you could get the entire planet to rally around and really start understanding this, what would be the first thing you'd tell them about telepathy?
Well, I talk about the three levels which we've covered. And I would talk about how it's a daily practice, because it really doesn't happen without this sort of consistent attention to building this bridge, to extending our attention upward. It's a very subtle process. And when we stop, even for a little while, it starts to dissipate. And I've noticed this in my own life, that it's really a consistent practice, a daily practice, that we extend our attention upward, we build this subtle bridge. And that this is in every tradition, this kind of teaching on the mind and how the mind is really the doorway and the tool that we use to access the higher world, really is everywhere. And what I did, again, with the book is I extended this esoteric information to show that this is a universal teaching that exists in all of our spiritual traditions. Really, it lies at the heart of all of our spiritual traditions.
Is there any limit to what we can do with this?
Absolutely none. Absolutely none. And that's another thing that was so fascinating to me about this, is that how it relates to the subject that we call genius. My book, the book that I, one of my favorite books was Willis Harmon's book, Higher Creativity. You must have had him on
Oh,
years ago.
maybe years ago, but I do know the book.
Yeah. Well, it was, I lugged it around from house to house. It was my favorite book. And in this book, he talks about how many of our greatest geniuses and visionaries had their intuitive breakthrough, that was the source of their genius. And when I, before I started the book, I read that book again, and I went to look at his sources. I looked at his bibliography, and I started to read some of the original books that he used. And when I read the full text of these interviews, a very interesting pattern emerged. What happened is that many of these people that we call geniuses were talking about their creative process in exactly the way it's explained in the wisdom teachings, that it's through the soul that they had access to the divine or universal mind, where information on all subjects, past, present, and future, is available. And once they made that connection through the soul, the information just flowed into their brains. And so it was absolutely fascinating to read about this. In the late 80s, an American violinist named Arthur Abell interviewed Puccini, Brahms, Strauss, and Wagner, and other well-known composers about the source of their creative genius. And I was fascinated by how consistent their experiences were. And they used the same kind of language. They talked about appropriating for their own use the information that's out there. And they said the same thing over and over again. I also found this experience with writers, with scientists. Einstein is a perfect example of this. But I saw it over and over and over. And what was exciting to me is I realized at a certain point that genius is not a rare and random event. It's an experience that any of us can cultivate. And when we make this higher connection, we all have access to this. It doesn't belong to everybody, to anybody. It belongs to all of us.
All right, let's go to the phones now, and we're going to do it all next hour as well with our guest, Colleen Morrow, and we're talking about her work, Spiritual Telepathy. And the magazine, Intuition, is it still out?
No, I stopped publishing in the year 2000.
No! Why?
Well, it served its purpose. I mean, it got harder and harder for magazines to exist, you know,
right,
with all the internet stuff that happened.
Now, online, it might work as an online magazine.
Well, I felt like it served its purpose, and for me as the creator, I really needed to go to the next level.
Yeah.
And I realized that I needed to educate myself about, you know, what the deeper implications were. So I really devoted myself to it for several years.
But it was your stepping stone, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you know what's interesting is that I didn't really see the big picture until afterwards. I was really just putting one foot in front of the other and following my guidance. And it said that we don't really need to see the big picture. We just need to know what our next step was. And I think that that's a good illustration because now I can see, you know, kind of where it led and why it was there at that particular time. But at the time, I didn't. I was just sort of doing what I thought was right.
Okay, let's go to the phones now. Barbara in Boulder, Colorado. I'll be there this weekend. Hi, Barbara. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George.
Good to have you with us.
This weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to be busy.
Oh, that sounds great. Well, I have a great story about when my grandmother passed away back in 1990.
Okay, I'm having trouble with your phone.
Really?
Yeah, are you on a cell phone or what?
I am.
I'm going to have Tom call you back, so I'll put you on hold. Tom, give her a call back and then see if you can reconnect with her for the story. Let's go to Rob, though, in Vancouver, Canada, International Line. Hi, Rob. Welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, George.
Sure thing.
I love, I'm glad to have this opportunity to share this story, because I have to say, through the knowledge you spread, extreme as it sounds, you saved my life. And in this one circumstance, and on things such as Colleen's talking about, and listening to your show, I've learned to listen to intuition. And I went on a road trip in Vancouver, or sorry, in BC, and they spent time going to old native burial grounds and just spending time and trying to listen and to the surroundings. And I hit an area which was a very narrow gorge, highway, and there was a very small space to pull aside, and there was a railroad line, and about 10 feet from the railroad line to the end, to the side of a river. And absolutely gorgeous place where you want to stop. I walked along the river's edge about a couple hundred feet, fairly rocky to a point that was an incredible view, and I spent some time there. And when I turned around and I decided, you know, walking back, and it was easier to walk along the railroad tracks and the railroad ties. So I was walking along, and I thought to myself, it just popped in my head, you know, I don't understand how people get hit by trains. It makes no sense. I don't know why this idea came into my head. So I intuitively turned around, and I looked, and I didn't see anything. I looked, and there was no train. There was nothing. And so I kept walking along the tracks, and I mean, almost like a second or two later, after I turned around, something popped in my head, and it just said, get off the tracks, right? It's not safe. Even though I turned around, I didn't see anything. And I stepped off the tracks, and it was about 8 steps after getting off the tracks, a massive, like, 200-car train just came right by me. No horn, no nothing.
You would have been flattened.
Oh, just smushed. And I've learned through, you know, things like Colleen is saying and listening to your show learning to listen to intuition. And in that case, even turning around and, just honestly not seeing anything there and then going to walk and then listening to the intuition, just get off the tracks. There it was.
That's a great story.
It's a great story. It's a good illustration about listening to our gut. Because even though it didn't make any sense, just like my experience in the garden didn't make any sense, we both took heed. We both followed it.
It's almost as if we have this instinction of radar within our system somehow, Colleen. I'm wondering now if it's something that is inherent with the mind or is it the body, where it's a mechanism, it's a sense, just like, you know, seeing and hearing and touching and tasting, mm-hmm. that it's just a part of us.
It is. Even Sheldrake talks about how it's instinctive, part of our biological nature.
Animals have it too.
Absolutely, and we share this kind of telepathy with the animal kingdom. And another way to look at it is body, mind, and spirit, because instinctive telepathy utilizes that solar plexus area. Then we have mental, or mind-to-mind telepathy, and then we have spiritual, so body, mind, and spirit.
When people remote view, they're tapping into the same system, aren't they?
Yeah, I would say remote viewing is applied clairvoyance, and telepathy and clairvoyance can be distinguished by telepathy, again, implies a communication, and clairvoyance is a perception beyond the normal range of space and time.
Go to Susan in Sacramento, California. Hi, Susan. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. I had one kind of like that guy. I was driving at night, and I got this voice. I think it was my guardian angel that told me, move over the next lane. When I moved over, I didn't even look. I just did it. And here came a car. It would have hit me head on. But that's not what I wanted to call for. A couple of months ago, maybe 3 months ago, I had this daytime vision. I've never had one in my life before. I'm looking at this girl, and she's putting a scarf around her neck, and I said, oh. She said, oh, I'm going to be biking home tonight. It's pretty cold out there. And I said, oh. All of a sudden, my eyes started spinning around, like around her aura, and I couldn't, like, control them. And I visioned her with bloody blonde hair. And I said, oh, you do wear a helmet, don't you? It just came out of my mouth. I didn't even know it was going to come out. It just came out. And she says, no. And then I tried to talk her into getting the helmet, but I don't know if she has it. Nothing's happened. I don't know. What is that? Was that a telepathy thing? Was that something that came to me to warn her?
Maybe you are seeing her in the future after a very sad, tragic accident. What do you think, Colleen?
That's what I think. I think it was a premonition.
Yes. A precognitive thought.
That's right.
And, God, let's hope nothing ever happens to that woman. That's kind of scary. Susan, are you in contact with her?
Yeah, I asked her later on, did you get a helmet yet? And she looks at me really funny. No, not yet.
I would keep pushing
it. It's going to be during raining time.
Do you know her well?
Kind of.
I would definitely push her to get that helmet, and let's hope she uses it.
Okay.
Because you know what? You could be calling me back on another show saying, guess what? She fell off and, you know, busted her head.
I feel that was going to be a big tragedy. Everybody's going to really feel bad and be hurt through the whole
job. And you could forewarn. You get that feeling now. It's a gift.
Yeah, she's a wonderful person, too.
And Colleen, let me ask you about the religious applications here. Is something... some spirit world giving us this authority, this power?
Well, I think it's inherent within us. You might talk about our connection with the higher beings. And I know that you had Gordon Davidson on the program.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he talks a lot about his telepathic communication with higher beings. And it's said that there's higher beings that guide the evolution of our planet. And they can't affect life on Earth directly. They have to work through us. So they look for people who have this connection between the soul and the brain. And when we do, they can throw down information. So we can work directly as intermediaries between the physical and spiritual worlds. We can be in direct communication, direct telepathic communication with these higher beings. And when we do that, we provide a great service. Many people are in touch with these higher levels. I had a wonderful time interviewing people and seeing how this really affects people. And what happens is when we make this connection to the soul, the first indication is a sense of responsibility, a sense of wanting to serve. You start to lose some of that sort of intense kind of competitive motivation where it's about me, 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 and you start to think about what you can do for others.
And that's important. That is
to be more service-oriented.
All right, Colleen, we're going to come back. Final hour to go with final stories and questions for you right here on Coast to Coast AM.